Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and you're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.
In the animal kingdom, the male performs to the woman, woos her with his beautiful feathers or flowing mane, is always trying to outstrut the other men. Why do humans do it the other way? It doesn't make sense. Men need us more than we need them. You were in the minority that day. You were in an our neighborhood, and almost everyone else there would have picked me. Younger, taller, shapelier me. Maybe even your husband, Milton.
That's crime novelist Laura Lippman reading a short excerpt from her book, Lady in the Lake. Laura's been named one of the most essential crime writers of the past 100 years. In her book, she combines elements of noir with an exploration of social issues like race, gender, and religion. The novel's set in Baltimore in 1966. Laura shares why she settled on this particular year.
I felt that so much of the fiction I had read about the 60s tended to focus on a couple of years, maybe 63, the assassination of John Kennedy, which was such a huge scar on the national psyche. Or people tended to write about the late 60s, when huge things happened again, where there seemed to be these great upheavals. 66 is an interesting kind of hinge year. Things are changing. There's a lot of stuff bubbling beneath the surface. But in many ways, the old order is holding on by its fingernails. I found this terrific book called 1966, which is a history of the year through its pop singles. And one of the key facts you find out when you read the book is that it's a year in the United States where Roger Miller had a number one song with King of the Road, and the Rolling Stones had a number one song with Satisfaction. And I thought, that's it. That's a time period. That's a culture that's really breaking apart, and that's interesting to me.
And also, I've read that you wanted to write a novel about a woman who wanted to matter, and this was a story that was very much of that time period.
It is. It was a time in which no one would have spoken about women having it all. That wasn't a concept yet. We were a little ways out from the Virginia Slims ads and the Anjali ad where she said she could bring home the bacon and fry it up in a pan, that whole thing. It was a time when there were a lot of women kind of quietly heading into the workforce. That did seem to me to be a key element of that era, of women beginning to look around and say, what if I wanted something more? And especially a woman like Maddie in Lady in the Lake, who has a son who's about to head to college, and a husband who, young as he is already talking about retirement. And there's a line early in the book where he asks Maddie, well, how do you feel about the Atlantic side of Florida versus the Gulf side? And she wonders, those are my choices now? That's all I get to decide is whether I'm going to retire in Boca or Sarasota? And I think that really sparks something in her because she's only 37 years old.
Yeah. Can you give us a brief outline of the storyline of Lady in the Lake without revealing any spoilers?
Sure, I think I can. Lady in the Lake is about a woman named Maddie Morgenstern Schwartz, who believes herself to be contented. She has a good marriage. She has a teenage son. Her life is just humming along. And she doesn't think to question anything until she has a chance encounter with an old high school classmate who indirectly, not meaning to, reminds her of all the promises that she made her young self. She saw herself as an intellectual. She saw herself as someone who was going to write, someone who was going to have an exciting, original life. And she broke all those promises to herself. And within weeks of that chance encounter, she's left her husband. She's moved into a new apartment. She's struggling to get by, and she has a really unexpected discovery that leads her to think, you know what? I could be a newspaper reporter, and I'm going to try to be that. And she tries, but what she finds out is that the newspaper only sees her as someone who could possibly be a clerical assistant, mm-hmm. a secretary, never a reporter. So she has to find a story that's small enough that they'll let her work on it, but potentially big enough that it will impress people if she breaks it open. And she focuses on the death of an African-American woman whose body has been found in the fountain, in the lake, at a public park, after a disappearance of many months that the daily newspapers have never acknowledged, in part because she is an African-American woman and there's very little interest.
The two murders that figure prominently in your novel, they're based on real crimes, right?
Yes. They're based on crimes that happened in 1969, and I made, again, the decision that, no, I wanted to write about 66, and I would repurpose those deaths for my book. In 1969, a woman named Shirley Parker was, in fact, discovered in the fountain at Druid Hill Park in Baltimore. And to this day, that remains an unsolved death. They couldn't even classify it as a homicide because they couldn't determine the cause of death by the time they found the body. The same year, a little girl, an 11-year-old girl, disappeared and was quickly found, and she had been murdered. And that case was solved very quickly. And as a kid growing up in Baltimore, it was a case I knew and was familiar with. I didn't find out about the so-called Lady in the Lake until I went to work at the Baltimore Sun, where it was a story that was sometimes written about as a local curiosity, an unsolved murder. And I was struck mostly by the fact that an 11-year-old girl had died, and I knew everything about that. I knew it contemporaneously. And a woman had died, and I knew nothing about it, and I had never even read about it.
Hmm. So that was kind of like the driving force, kind of inspired the novel, I guess. Would that be fair to say?
I think it is fair to say. And then the trick was, how does one tie those two things together when they're not connected? And you know, I'm a crime novelist, and very proudly so, but I'm not the kind of crime novelist who's going to write a story in which there's some vast conspiracy involving all the higher-ups in a city that are somehow going to link these two deaths. That's just not of interest to me. I like to work a little bit closer to the ground. I like to tell stories that feel real and not overly dramatized. So I wanted to find a different way to link those two stories, and that was Maddie. Maddie is interested in the first death, and she's interested in the second, and she's the only connection.
How did your experience as a journalist influence the way you approached writing Lady in the Lake?
Women Maddie's age would have been my colleagues and mentors. I knew their stories. Mm-hmm. I knew a lot about what had happened to them. And I think especially in newsrooms, they were pretty raucous, careless places. You know, they certainly wouldn't begin to be considered appropriate in today's environment.
Yeah.
But they probably shouldn't have been considered appropriate in their time.
Yeah.
They were pretty sexist. They tended to be very gendered in the idea of who could do what job, who covered what beat. And I was surrounded by some pretty hard-charging women who were determined to change those ideas, but it wasn't always easy.
Yeah. You cover a lot of different issues throughout your novel, gender, race, and religion. How important was it to you to explore social issues in Lady in the Lake?
It's always important to me to explore social issues. One of my favorite novelists is Dreiser.
Mm.
And the social novel, which comes in and out of vogue within literary fiction, has always been very important to crime fiction. And when I started writing crime fiction in the 1990s, there was a sense that certain topics, the focus on what it meant to live in a particular city and its problems, class issues, economic inequality, all of those things were kind of on the table at the time for crime writers to write about. No one seemed to be that interested. Money is so central to so many crime novels that It allows us to write about class and economic inequality in a way that wasn't always being taken advantage of in literary fiction. I think literary fiction has swung back around and is more interested in the social novel.
Yeah.
I read a lot of literary fiction. I'm, you know, a huge fan of all fiction. But I see the crime novel as a particularly good vehicle for writing about the times we live in now and writing about certain issues as long as one doesn't become polemical about them.
How much have the racial dynamics in 1960s Baltimore, when your book is set, how much have they changed over the past 50 years?
That is a very big and complicated question. I've been doing some research that has nothing to do with my novels, but has to do with a book of essays that I've been asked to write. And I know that by the 60s, Baltimore City had become a majority African-American school district, which would seem to indicate that the city as well had become majority African-American. So that's the history of Baltimore, that it has long had a minority-majority population, and it has been very reluctant to grant power to that population. It was a long time before we had an African-American mayor. And even now, with the politicians of the city more and more looking like the people that they represent, it's still a city that is full of so many haves and have-nots. This is a city that is not providing enough opportunities for the people who really need them.
Has writing Lady in the Lake changed the way you think about Baltimore in any way?
No. No, I mean, I live in Baltimore. My life is intertwined with Baltimore. I'm very much of the city. Lady in the Lake didn't change my relationship with Baltimore. I think it changed me a lot as a writer.
How so?
It was an unusual book in which I decided that I wasn't going to just tell the story of the living woman and the dead woman, but that I was going to try in these tiny little chapters to tell the story of almost every person who shows up in the book. And, you know, I decided in writing this book that I was going to write these like 18 little micro profiles within the book.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite things about the book, because I loved how you'd introduce like a character like the little man and the bartender, and then in the very next chapter we'd have these little micro profiles. It was great. You did. It was so well done, and it really sort of added a depth, an extra depth and layer to your story.
Well, thank you. And I've been asked a lot since I wrote the book, where did you get that idea, and how did you know you were going to do it, and when did you realize it was going to work? And my answer has consistently been, I don't have a clue. I don't know where that idea came from. I don't know why I thought I could pull it off. I was really adamant about it. And it's made me even more ambitious. I never lacked for ambition. I never will. But this one took it up a notch. And I find myself working on my next book and saying, how am I going to challenge myself? How am I going to challenge the form? What am I going to do in this book that I've never done before? And those are really important questions to me.
Laura Lippman, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. This is a pleasure.
Laura Lippman is the author of Lady in the Lake. You can find out more about Laura at WPR.org/beta. That does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Steve Gorman, Andrew Ray, and Laura Lippman. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta podcast via iTunes or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Can't help it that I'm sized for love.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Seems to me this silly son of a bitch already forked over, big time.
And thanks to you, our alphas. Until next week, I'm Doug Gordon.
Look, I am 96% sure that you are the guy, so why don't you just, like, admit it?